On today's episode of this podcast, we've got a very exciting guest with Dr. Daniel Galindo, Chief Clinical Officer at Integrity Dental Services. For those of you that don't know, my name is Rob Dinker. I'm the founder and CEO of Integrity Dental Services. Before we get started in talking about some of these full arch topics and what's going on in the landscape and space of the full arch world, Dr. Galindo, do you mind giving us a little background about yourself?
Absolutely. Thanks, Rob, for the invitation. Love being here with you and sharing some of my experiences. I'm a second-generation dentist, originally from Bogota, Colombia. I trained and did dental school in Bogota at Universidad Javeriana, and in 1996 moved to the U.S. to pursue my prosthodontic training at the University of Rochester in Rochester, New York. After completing my residency, I took a teaching position at the University of Connecticut and was there for 3 years learning about the academic environment in the U.S. And then coming from the tropics, I had to move out of snow country and relocated to Scottsdale, Arizona in 2002, where I've been in private practice since.
So let's talk about sort of the full arch landscape. And I know you, along with a few others, are sort of known as the early trailblazers or pioneers of the full arch space. And I know it looked a lot different, let's say, back in the early days to where we are now with the makeup of intraoral scanning, photogrammetry, a lot of those fun things we'll get to later on in today's episode. But why don't you sort of talk for a minute briefly about the day in the life of your role as a prosthodontist and the original days of All on Four when you first started at ClearChoice?
Yeah, so I joined ClearChoice in 2008. We were the seventh center that they opened at the time, and we were basically adopting a treatment modality that was brand new to the United States. There weren't many people doing All-on-4 treatment back then, so we had to, one, learn the protocols that were initially established by Pablo Malo in Portugal and one of the trailblazers of the All-on-4 in the U.S., Mark Adams, and be able to adopt those systems into a brand new operation and transforming patients on a daily basis, but at the same time, learning how to complete those transformations. So it was a lot of hard work. It was really rewarding work, but we put a lot of hours in the office and learn how to make it better. We're talking about a scale of not doing one of these once a month or once a week, but actually doing three or four of these per day. So it helped us develop a skill set that clearly was above the line of what was being presented out there at the time and became the reference place for how to do these procedures.
I bet that made for some pretty long days in the beginning.
Oh, my goodness. There was days in which we were walking out of the office at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. And again, this is not to talk about the skill set, because the skill was there, was just being able to develop the methods of how to get this done and get it done right the first time. If there's something that I've learned is I just want to get things done the right way from the beginning.
Yeah, I think that's a good point and a good transition or segue into one of our next topics and talking about fast forward now into 2024. We're seeing a lot more of GPs wanting to get into the full arch space. And let's talk about, I know a lot of people have had success with it. In the practice you came from when you were practicing prior to your new role, I know you had a oral surgeon in the office with you for every case. Then you would take over as the prosthodontist, and that was sort of the model that you all adapted and scaled, which has been very successful. Let's talk about this, the new space, and maybe some insight for GPs that are listening that could be some possible challenges or hurdles from them that you guys learned in the early days and stuff maybe they could be aware of when wanting to get into the full arch space.
Initially, when we started doing this, it was two specialists that were using their skills to be able to get a patient completed. And the most important thing that I learned is I couldn't just be a prosthodontist. I also had to know oral surgery. And on the same end, the oral surgeon needed to understand some prosthodontic principles, because at the end of the day, we wanted to make sure that the patient would go home with a satisfactory outcome based on the planning and the execution that we had done. So I had to revisit anatomy, complete anatomy of the maxilla, the mandible, facial anatomy, and the surgeon had to kind of relearn principles of biomechanics and occlusion and whatnot. So fast forward to 2024, when you have a single practitioner delivering these procedures, your knowledge has to be very broad-based, and you have to understand both phases of treatment, the surgical and the restorative phase, so that you can have a really successful outcome. And that's the goal for every single patient that accepts this as a treatment modality to address their problems.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And that's some of the things we see in the lab on a daily basis, and where people are wanting to change and adapt new workflows. For example, if some offices out there now are marketing, you know, going to the final restoration to a final zirconia within 24 hours. I guess to be more appealing or marketing to the patient, like, hey, you don't have to go through so many steps or so many interims until the final. Also, it's a cost savings from the doctor standpoint on office visits. But let's stop for a second and say, what are we giving up? You know, if for so long and so many years, the benchmark or the standard has been, you know, the protocol of understanding when the soft tissue in the mouth, everything becomes stabilized, the osseointegration of the implants. I mean, and some of these GPs that are wanting to do the surgery, utilize photogrammetry and go to final zirconia that day or the next day. What are some concerns or areas that would concern you as a prosthodontist in doing that?
Well, let's talk about another one of our passions. We like fast cars.
Correct.
We love fast cars, but you need to know when you're going to drive a fast car fast and when you're going to drive it cautiously. You can't just take a turn at 120 miles per hour because you're going to be slamming into a wall. So the variable that is not being considered right now is the patient's biology. And no matter how fast I want to go with the treatment, I've got to respect biology. Tissues swell up during the course of surgery. There's a healing phase that will happen that includes inflammation. And if you don't account for that, the end result is not going to accommodate the healed tissue. So it's very important to keep that variable in mind. There's treatment alternatives that will allow for the correction of any variance that occurs from, let's call it day one after surgery to day 120 after surgery. But there's some others that are static and there's no way of modifying it without compromising the final outcome. We were talking about this the other day. You can't reline zirconia in a way in which you're going to be happy for it for the long term. So again, you need to know when you step on the gas, but you also need to know when you step on the brake pedal and slow down the procedure and respect all phases of what biology involved in a human.
Yeah, and I think that sort of plays into what we're seeing on a daily basis and talking with some of our clients who have, I'm not going to say jumped in with both feet like some of these other implant groups out there. You know, maybe there's an elderly patient that they're only doing an arch on the lower and they feel like doing a high water design, it could work. And others, you know, it's like, well, when we get to the point, if the tissues change that much, then I'm going to make them another zirconia at the 4, 5, 6 month phase. But then it's like, then what was, in my opinion, what was the speed, the urgency, the rush to go ahead and get them in a zirconia within 24 hours if the possible treatment protocol. I was talking with one of our docs in Chicago, and I asked him the question, not to challenge, but I want to learn. I'm like, I want to understand because the nature of this landscape of what we're doing is changing, and I want to make sure that integrity is always up to speed and understanding the expectations of our clients. And he told me, he said, Rob, you know, I'm sort of taking it as I go, and this is uncharted waters. I'm wanting to learn what's acceptable, what's clinically acceptable, but chances are, like you said, I'm not going to be happy with relining the zirconia to really give the patient the best treatment out there. Probably going to make them another zirconia several months down the road. So, you know, we're all cost conscious, you know, in the lab. Sure, I would love to make multiple zirconias for the doctor, but let's talk about what's best for the patient. And I think that will be a great transition or segment into our next piece when we talk about education. One thing I'm super excited about, and with you coming on as Chief Clinical Officer at Integrity, is the education facility that we've built and the infrastructure at the Scottsdale location for Integrity of what's coming. For those of you that want to check out our website to learn more on future dates for events, but we're going to take a few minutes to talk now about what we're wanting to offer as a service, because education in anything we do, dental, non-dental, is very key. that we're educated by those of our peers that have been there and experienced. And I'm very excited. You know, we don't just have a lecture hall set up to play PowerPoints. We actually have a fully operational operatory so that we can bring in a live patient. So everything that you're sitting there talking about that could be on a PowerPoint slide, we can show them real time. So I want to take a second and let you talk about the education piece and what we're hoping and what we will be offering at the Scottsdale Integrity location.
That's one of the things that excites me the most. So, you know, in my previous career, I completed about 6,000 arches of full mouth reconstructions using the all-on-4 treatment concept. And that has allowed me to learn what works and what doesn't work, and what you can implement and you can't implement, and what's the next step? Well, being able to share that with people that are motivated by the same passion that I have in helping restore somebody's dental condition to a state-of-the-art type of situation. So we are going to break down each step of the procedure into sessions that clinicians can come over, see how they're performed, see them in a real life situation, see photographs and sequences of what we've done with patients, and understand how they can deliver a result that's more predictable, more successful, more long lasting. Ultimately, I think that's the goal of any clinician that is helping somebody as a patient address a particular situation that they have in their mouth, edentulism or broken teeth or extensive decay or trauma or whatever it is. The ultimate goal is to be able to let that patient move forward and carry on with a normal life, unimpeded life.
Yeah. To play into that, one thing I've learned over time, good friend of mine and a doctor that you used to work with, Dr. Mark Andralis, he really sort of educated and brought light to me about it's not just the education for the day of the surgery and what you guys do with the oral surgeon, the prosthodontist, but also after surgery when it comes to hygiene. Then my brain started thinking about it, and I had to start asking different clients we have, what is your hygiene protocol for your patient? Some of them could answer the question, some couldn't. And obviously, speaking with you, I know that you hold that to a very high standard regard. And that's one thing for any patients out there listening, if you're thinking of getting this treatment, not here to sell you on where to go, but ask the questions of what happens after surgery. Once I've had this all on four, all on X procedure done, what is the standard of care and what's going to happen for hygiene? I want to talk about that for a minute because I think that's something in this industry, we're so eager to get the treatment done. Let's close the patient. Let's get them better treatment because we are giving the patient, you know, a better quality of life and a path for hope. And it's like, what is the standard for hygiene? I think a lot of patients haven't even thought about that. You know, for some of these patients, there's a reason you're having this surgery done is because of how you took care of the oral environment. Some of them, other things have happened they can't control. But let's talk a bit for what you think, you know, the standard of hygiene should be for one of these patients.
Yeah, and I think that what you were mentioning before is very important. The conversation with the patient has to be a comprehensive conversation, not only what's going to happen the day of surgery and what to expect with swelling and bruising and discomfort, not only what's going to happen when you make the definitive bridge, but there's a life after you put the definitive bridge, and the care that a patient gives themselves and the care that they seek afterwards, whether with a dentist or a dental hygienist for the maintenance of their bridge, is incredibly important for the long-lasting result of this treatment. You cannot just assume that because I'm getting some titanium implants in my mouth and a zirconia bridge, it's the end of the road.
Correct.
It's just really not that. You need to be meticulous as a patient, as a clinician, how to teach the patient on the regular home care that they need to follow, the brushing, the flossing, the use of the water pick, and then a regular program where you see the patient in the office every 6 months, every 4 months, every 3 months. It all depends on the individual situation of the patient. But you want to be able to see this patient. And if there's a habit that you discover in one of these post-op visits, you want to break that habit if it's one that's creating harm or that could potentially create harm for the patient. The goal is that these are the teeth that are going to last for a very, very long time. I hear it often where patients are told these are going to last a lifetime. But, okay, what are you doing in the process of that lifetime to take care of it? You can't expect just to not need to do anything for it. So that care, aftercare, is incredibly important, key to success. And again, will allow the dentist to discover a problem early on and make the fixing of that problem a lot simpler than if you wait 5 years to see a patient.
Absolutely. And that sort of made me think last night when you and I were talking at dinner. We were talking about some meetings and the AO meeting that you were just at, and sort of education that's out there now, sort of an unknown, but there's definitely a fear amongst you and your colleagues of peri-implantitis. And without having these type of hygiene visits and bringing the patient in to see, this is, I guess, over my level of education, but is this when you would be noticing these trends that the patient's developing peri-implantitis? If that's the case, what's going to become the standard protocol? We don't know. There's a lot of unknown out there. But back to the point, if you're not coming in for a regular visit for hygiene, if you're not going back and developing a protocol for your patient so that you can monitor and track the success of that restoration in their mouth, I tell people, it's like having an air conditioning unit. The filter is very important. If you don't ever change the filter, you're never going there to check, but then all of a sudden your unit's freezing up. That could have been preventative. So like, as you said, as important it is, we want to get to that definitive restoration, whether the patient's getting in a zirconia over time, or whatever the restoration may be, that's great. But we have to talk about life after that final restoration seating and what is the protocol. And I can tell you, with the large number of doctors we work with and the thousands of prosthetics that we've made for patients, not that many, I can tell you only a handful that really are discussing or talking about the hygiene with their patient. I'm not saying that more aren't doing it, but I just feel like the patients we talk to when they call us and they say, hey, I know you're in this industry. My grandmother's thinking of this restoration, my sister, whoever, who do you recommend? This person has this price and they said I can get to the final this fast. Well, let's sit back for a second and think, like you said, we're hoping these teeth last a lifetime. Why are we rushing, or why does a few extra weeks make that big of a deal if we're able to know that we're able to eliminate something that could arise or become a compromise? Just because the competition or someone's marketing on Snapchat or TikTok or Facebook that, hey, I can do an arch at X amount. we're not going out buying a new jacket. We're not going out buying some commodity. We're talking about something that's going to become part of your body, and it's got to adapt and the biology of it and the quality of the restoration. And there's so many out there that do it so well, but my fear, and we're seeing, there's so many that are wanting to enter this space and their motive behind it is just cost, that patient care is being jeopardized. And that really worries me.
Yeah. And it has to worry all of us in the industry. We go back to setting expectations. If you set the expectation of how long a treatment is going to take and how long it's going to take to get it done right and properly, I think most everybody will agree. There might be situations where you need a compromise because there's an urgent trip or an event that's coming up and you do want to accelerate. But you have to know how to do it. We go back to when you can step on the gas and when you shouldn't. What we were talking about, the meeting of the Academy of Osseointegration, the topic being peri-implantitis, it's kind of a depressing topic, but we've come full circle with the practice of implant dentistry. In the 90s, we were learning about cosmetics and what we could do to achieve a great result. In the 2000s, we were learning how to restore full arches with dental implants. And now in the 2010s, we were learning that we don't have to work only with hybrids. We can use zirconia and ceramics to obtain some results that are amazing. Now we're learning that there's something that can affect all that beautiful work that we've done in the past, and we need to learn how to break that cycle. And I attended several of the lectures, and it's interesting that there's still a lot of puzzle pieces that we haven't found out how to put them together, to understand what triggers somebody all of a sudden losing some bone around an implant, losing bone around all of their implants. We don't know if it was a previous condition that the patient had that's leading to the compromise of one of the sites, or if it's generated by medications that the patients are taking or whatnot. So it really opens our eyes to the fact that a conversation with the patient before you grab a scalpel or a handpiece needs to be had with the patient to set the expectation and to get them invested in their treatment, not only from a financial perspective, which I know drives a lot of what we do, but also from a commitment perspective so that that result will be a long-lasting one.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Glendo, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a great topic. I know we could sit here and talk for hours, but we wanted to just sort of hit some high-level points. Definitely look forward to having you back. Like I said, we'll be continuing to check back on a lot of these things we're talking about. I'm looking forward to some technology that's out there that I've been privileged to for peri-implantitis that could possibly be a solution for that, as well as some other things. There's some exciting materials. There's some great, right now it's such an exciting time in full arch dentistry, but at the same time, we have to make sure that we don't get in front of our skis. We make sure that the materials that are being developed are tested, and the benchmark test is not only out of the oral environment, but also in the oral environment to make sure that we're giving the patient the best quality of care. And it's the same thing from the lab side where I'm at. We're wanting to make sure that just because we could possibly get faster, what are we jeopardizing? I mean, that's been something to talk about with a lot of these iOS scanners. As they get faster, what are we giving up? So thank you again. Look forward to working with you in the future. And like I said, looking forward to possibly 6 months to a year coming back and circling back on some of these topics we discussed today.
This is so exciting. Thanks for the invitation and can hardly wait for the next time.